Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello and welcome to the British English Podcast, the show that helps you better understand British culture and British English. And to do that regarding the culture, I often like to compare and contrast with other cultures to see how far apart or not we are from one another. And for some reason today, it compels me to say that deep down, I believe as humans, we all want the same things, right? We want to feel safe, feel loved, and perhaps appreciated. But the way in which we go about expressing that in our own little behaviors and quirks varies, in my opinion. And this, I believe, is influenced heavily by our cultural upbringing. And today, we have a fascinating cultural exploration to unpack. Joining us is Chris from Instant English, whose remarkable travels have taken him from the UK through the bustling streets of Japan, the vibrant landscapes of Peru, and finally to the sunny shores of Spain. So without further ado, let's bring him on. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Charlie. Hello, everyone. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm 3 days through a cold, but I'm quite proud of it because normally I'd just accept man flu and just go to bed. But right. This time I've done what all the women in my life seem to do and just carry on with life. And it's been all right.
Yeah, I'm on the latter still, very much just, you know, sort of crawling up in bed. I have a cold as well, sorry.
Oh, really?
So yeah, I'm struggling as well. But I think it's good. Get it out of the way. Start the year. You know, do the hard stuff first and then the year will be easy, hopefully.
Yeah, nice. Nice approach to that fact that we're both feeling sick. Have you got any New Year's resolutions since this recording is January the 7th? Is that on your mind? Do you do that kind of thing?
I think I'm trying to kick the alcohol a bit more. Not that I'm a massively heavy drinker, but I think, for example, I want to do a few stretches. Like January, I would like to not have any alcohol. And I have so far, it's been seven days.
Well done.
If you don't include the first.
if you don't include the first week.
Yeah. So it's going good so far. That would probably be about it. I'm not sure what else really. Just kind of have some healthier habits, like more fruits and the generic stuff.
Yeah.
Is there anything you can inspire me with?
Well, I was just going to say about the gym kind of thing. I joined a new gym in earlier in last year, and I've finally found a habit that I really enjoy and finally feeling really good about, like, how my body is not aching every day. And and then when we came back in the new year, this gym was full with people. The classes were just taken up. It's insane how many people go back in January. So yes, that's a cliche one that you could perhaps add to the list if you wanted.
Yeah. My gym is still quite quiet. I was a bit skeptical going this week, but because yesterday was a national holiday, the Three Kings in Spain, it's sort of like the second Christmas. So it's been dead in the gym. So maybe next week will be horrendous, but so far so good.
Okay, so people were busy celebrating the Three Kings. Is it the Three Wise Men? Is that the Three Kings? Are they?
That's, yeah, sorry. Yeah, the three wise men, but they call it Los Reyes or something, I think.
Yeah, no, I imagine it's probably kings, but we maybe have a different label for them. Maybe they're masquerading as wise and kings. Greedy, greedy. okay, well, we'll talk about Spain in a bit, but we've got a lot of cultural exploration to get through. So let's get on with it. Let's start with your origins. you mentioned in an email that you are from Oxford, yes? Or near Oxford.
Yeah, well, I was born in Oxford and then grew up outside in a village called Rorton, which is not the prettiest name to pronounce, but Rorton. And sort of grew up sort of living a very village lifestyle, I would say. It wasn't too far from bigger towns, but yeah, growing up as a child, you know, I had a lot of freedom. You know, I could stay out until in the summer, you know, 11 p.m. or something, you know, nothing bad ever happened and that kind of thing. So right. Had a lot of freedom.
That's nice. Yeah. So can I ask your age? What generation are you?
Yeah, I'm 91. I was born 91. In 91, so I'm 32, going on 33, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I'm 1 year your senior. You would be one year below me in school.
Does it get better?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, you start to own the aches and pains.
Yeah. For me, it's the grey hairs are killing me. I feel like people say, oh, you'd be a silver fox. And I'm like, well, at the moment it's a patchy fox. So it's like, I don't like it, but you know.
Like, what I can don't you know. Do? I don't think that's too bad. But yeah, so you were brought up in Oxford or near Oxford. What would you say one of your earliest memories are that you can think of that really captures the essence of growing up in the UK?
It's hard to say because, well, it's not hard to say, but I have, well, my parents are Irish. So I sort of have I had a very Irish upbringing in that sense. I, like, for example, I remember going to Irish dances in like big sort of school halls, where my sister would dance first and, you know, they had little shows and performances. And then basically all the parents kind of get gradually more and more drunk. And then, and I just remember being there, not really having anything to do and just sort of hanging out and just sort of running around with other kids. And there being loads of like smoke as well, because you used to be able to smoke indoors.
Yeah, right.
So like everyone would be smoking. And so that's my earliest memory, going to these dances. And I always be like, oh, I hate them. They're so boring. Because I would do nothing, you know, I'd just be there. But it was part of like, you know,
that's
accepting my culture. And
yeah. That kind so of everyone thing. There was Irish?
Yeah, or of Irish descent. Yeah. Yeah, of some kind. Yeah.
Okay.
Typically.
Yeah. And your accent, you pronounce things with the ah sound, dance. Would you say grass instead of grass?
So this is the problem, right? Because I grew up in the South. However, my mum, she grew up in Liverpool.
Right.
So she moved over and then she grew up. So she says stuff to me. I was with her over Christmas and then she would say bath. And I'd be like, oh, it's bath, mum. Like, let's not, you know, mix up my accent too much, please. Because I didn't know this until I started teaching. And then I realized I'm sort of chopping and changing between the two because, you know, I listen to my mum, but also I have my friends and so on from the South. So
yeah.
It really depends.
Right. Okay. Because I was going to say, I would imagine the Oxford, the schools that you went to in Oxford would probably be the Bath grass fast kind of accent.
Yeah.
Is that accurate of me to assume that or not?
No, it's true. Yeah, it is true. It's just that I sort of chop and change between the two.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm trying to be a bit more sort of regulated, but I blame my mum.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not here nor there, just interested in why. So your mum from Liverpool, but is it your father's side that are Irish or your mum's parents are Irish, perhaps?
So, yeah. So my mum's parents are Irish and then my dad is Irish.
Interesting. So I was speaking to some Irish people and they were, I knew of it. I knew of the famine in Ireland and the brutality that the British Empire or the English at that point was horrible to Irish people. And they told me about it and reminded me of it. And they said, this is why we don't like English people. Do you feel that within your family? Is there any resentment there?
Yeah. I mean, so little things like it was, you know, watching football, for example, growing up, whenever England were on TV, my dad would always be like, oh, they're rubbish. Look at them. They're pathetic. They're, you know, falling over each other or whatever. They could be winning or whatever, but he would always be very negative towards them. Not that he was a big football fan, but he still would watch it with me. And then whenever Ireland were playing, it was always like, oh, yeah, come on, boys. Like, they're doing great. And it was like they were like losing to, I don't know, Estonia or something. They were just terrible to watch, but it was always like,
sorry, Estonia.
Yeah, sorry, Estonia. I mean, just trying to think of a smaller nation like Ireland.
Yeah, right. Okay. So he was very loyal to Ireland. So the dances was a big thing. What about talking about like food and local cuisine? What was your favorite kind of dish growing up? Was it an Irish kind of based dish or an English one?
Well, yeah, the other thing I remember playing, I used to play a lot of rugby and football on, you know, Sundays and Saturdays. So I remember being very excited about the egg butties after, like, used to get, you know, there'd be food. And I was a vegetarian growing up. So I used to remember the egg butties a lot.
And an egg butty, just an egg in a bap, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Egg in a bun, that's it.
With brown any sauce, bacon?
The sauce of your choice. No, there was bacon in the vicinity, but I was a veggie, so.
Yeah, fair. Any others?
Yeah, a lot of spuds, so potatoes. You know, I used to remember, because I was vegetarian, my whole family were meat eaters. It was just me because I was a little bit fussy as a child. So my mum got fed up and she said, well, if you want to just have vegetables, then okay. So I used to have like a whole plate of potatoes, like mashed potato. And then like, you know, pepper and salt and cheese. And I was very happy. Whereas my family would have meat and two veg, right? They'd have sort of mashed potato and then chicken or carrots, you know, whatever. Yes. So that was amazing for me.
Okay. And so did your desires change as you grew up with food? Did you want more than just mashed potato?
Yeah. I think as I got older, you know, you become a teenager and people would start, or friends would start to ask me, like, do you want to share a pizza or something? And then I would say, well, yeah, sure. Let's, you know, split our money and buy a pizza. Oh, let's get pepperoni, they would say to me. And then I would be like, well, I can only have margarita. So the little awkward situation started to appear and it became more and more awkward. So then I eventually decided to go for it. So I went in the fridge and there was a sloppy Giuseppe from Pizza Express. And I never looked back.
That is a good one to try for your first. I think that's quite a good one.
Even I went back at Christmas and I was like, Mum, get the sloppy Giuseppe. I'm craving it. So
how many years have you been a meat eater now?
So this was when I was like 15.
Oh,
15,
right. Okay.
16. So it's been a while now. Yeah.
I love that. Sloppy Giuseppe did it for you. That is really good. So I think you just said Pizza Express. A Pizza Express it is a brand, a chain of pizzas in the UK. Very, very, very popular. My sister likes to go to this restaurant every birthday. I'm a bit over it, to be honest, but they do good pizzas for the fridge at home.
What did you grow up on then in terms of dishes?
My mum would recycle kind of like six or seven main ones. Shepherd's pie, but so she would put baked beans in this. Yeah, your face says it all. So I didn't know that wasn't normal.
I mean, you're talking to me who had a plate of potatoes, so it's
yeah, but you still judged it. It's just amazing. Yeah, my wife's family, they said, no, that's really not normal recently. So yeah, she did that. She did a spaghetti bolognese. She would do a chicken roast every Sunday, a lasagna, a few others, fish pie with tuna. Thoughts on that?
Sounds appetizing. Yeah, I like
it. Okay. Yeah. Again, that was another one that people were like, you don't normally put tuna in a fish pie, but I don't really know.
You can't really go wrong with tuna. It's lovely and everything, really, you know, put it on pizza. Whatever you want, really.
Yeah. So that's your food. That's your food. And you're now full and ready to go to Japan. Although I did want to ask you about quick childhood games. Any childhood games that you remember?
Yeah, so I think growing up in a village, it was very outdoorsy. Everything was outdoors. So, and it's before phones and also computers as well. So heads and volleys was a big one.
Okay.
So basically, we didn't have, so we wouldn't normally have enough to play a full match, a full football match. So if there was like six of us, you know, we'd do heads and volleys, which basically was where one person was in goal and then you had to score with either your head or a volley. So the ball in the air, if it touched the ground, or if you scored without a volley or a head, then the other person would go in goal. And then after, I think it five goals, you get stingers. So you have to sort of stand there and turn around and people would blast the ball at you.
Yeah. So you would sort of turn around and maybe bend over a bit in a sort of awkward position, ready for your ass to be spanked by a bottom, by a ball. By a ball, by a football on the ass. Is that what you got?
Yeah, I can confirm that was basically it. And, you know, playing in the winter as well, because I remember going out into the park or the field near my house, just not wearing anything, basically, like, you know, a t-shirt and shorts, and it would be December or whatever. But like, okay, I'll just run around. So, but then when you had the stingers, it would be the most agonizing pain because it's cold and.
Yeah, then you wish you had triple layered up for the padding. Yeah, that's true. Did you ever combine drinking with football, with any kind of games like that?
No, I don't think I did. No, I always kept that separate, really. And,
good to keep them separate. I just remember a game, you just reminded me. We would go to the woods. This is about 14 years old. Go to the woods and take a bottle of spirits from one of our family's sort of collections without them knowing, obviously. And we would take that one person would have had a football and then we'd be round in a group and do keepy uppies. So trying to keep the ball up and passing it to each other. And then if it dropped, that person would take a swig of vodka.
Oof.
Did you do any of that?
No, didn't do that. No, I didn't. But that does sound there's more jeopardy in that one than the stingers, really, I think.
Yeah. Well, I actually wasn't as good as my friends at Keepy Uppies, and they managed to make me almost not finish, but, you know, consume a lot of that vodka. And for years after, I couldn't go near the smell of it. Yeah, I forgot about that.
I think just for me growing up, that sense of the alcohol, which was my sort of introduction to the, you know, the world of alcohol, was cider. You used to be able to buy like a big bottle of Strongbow.
Yes.
Even now I can't touch it because I just have those memories of, you know, those sort of late teens drinking a lot of cider, and that was horrific. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the branding for Strongbow. Like, you know, McDonald's, I think they try to get us early with Happy Meals and make the parties all around the food at McDonald's and get us hooked for life. It's kind of like the opposite for Strongbow, isn't it? They need to sort that out because we go too far too soon with it and then we never go back.
I think it's just the size of the bottle. They just make it massive. So then you end up drinking all of it as, you know, a 16-year-old without any control. Not that I have much now, but, you know, less then.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not picking up a 3-liter bottle most days still, are you?
No.
Well, you've done 7 days of not, right?
Yeah, now we're talking about it though, Monday does sound like a good day to get back on the bottle.
Right, okay, so that's your cultural upbringing in England covered perfectly. Let's ask you, why did you choose to fly off to Japan?
So I studied in Manchester and I did a literature degree, and then I finished and I wanted to travel the world, and my heart was set on South America because I watched a movie called The Motorcycle Diaries about Che Guevara. So I kind of just fell in love with South America from the age of about 13. So I was thinking, okay, how can I get there and live there forever? And I discovered that teaching could be an option because they need teachers, especially English teachers, right?
Yeah. So
I applied everywhere, focusing mostly on South America. So I applied for a job in Iraq as well.
Right. Okay.
Because money was amazing, but you had to get a bodyguard and so on. But it boiled down to I had an offer for Madrid, an offer for Argentina, and an offer for Tokyo. Tokyo was sort of not really on my radar, really. I just thought, well, they're kind of going to pay for my visa, the flight. But I didn't really want to go there. I had no sort of great feeling for it. But the other options, I've been to Madrid like X amount of times, so I kind of didn't want to go to Madrid. And then I wanted to go to Argentina, but it sounded really dodgy. It was like, come here, train for 2 weeks, and then maybe if you're, you know, if you're good, we'll give you a job. And I was like, well, I was 23 and I thought, I can't really do that. So I just basically flipped a coin in the end between Madrid and Tokyo, and then Tokyo won. So
right, okay, just
but it was
just
a blessing in disguise. I loved it.
So. Okay, yeah. So just how all of those lovely fairy tales start. Once upon a time, there was a guy that didn't want to go, but he flipped a coin and he ended up going.
I know, it's the classic.
Lovely, but it proved a successful experience. Yes.
Yeah, I think it was better because looking back now, I didn't know anything. I didn't even bother looking in, you know, Googling before I went. I was just like, I'll go there, make loads of money, and then go to South America. So when I got there, everything was new and fresh. And I was like, you know, it was really nice. The nice. Fact that I just sort of was taking it in for the first time.
Yeah. 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 So you hadn't got any expectations in your mind before. Yeah. Mm. Were there any like surprising aspects of the culture that you encountered?
Everything. Yeah. I mean, it is mad. It is a different planet. You know, I remember being there on my first weekend. So I arrived at the end of October and I went out for Halloween in Shibuya. Shibuya is like the main, one of the biggest areas with the crossing, right? The very famous sort of iconic crossing.
Oh, I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
So they don't do it now. It got banned, apparently. So there used to be big parties in the streets for Halloween. So all right. I went out there with a girl from Mexico that I just met. And we were walking around and little things like the bin men were dressed up as Mario and Luigi.
Nice.
And they had the theme nice. Song every time they would get the rubbish. They had a little scooter. So they'd get out of the van, get on their scooter, and then it would be like, and they pick up the rubbish and then throw it in the van, and then they would be like, opa, and then they carry on. So
wow.
What, who, so I was like,
would the whoopa, would that come out of the speaker, or would they say it out loud?
No, that was them just shouting that.
That was
bit.
Them. Nice.
They had a speaker
I like
for
that.
Music.
Yeah, but that's great that they, you know, I would imagine the first couple of times, sure. But then, you know, they've done that 1,000 times that day. Dedication to...
They're dedicated.
Mimicking.
Yeah. Loads of things like that were just, yeah. Like even when you go to Shinjuku, another very popular sort of downtown or central area, all the lights just take you back. Everything is lit up. I've never seen so many lights. And I don't know if have you ever been to Japan?
No. I mean, I've been as a child, I did a layover and we were there for one night and I got a Coca-Cola for like £7. I think I remember my dad was outraged from a vending machine. But other than that, I have no memory of Tokyo, but I really do want to go.
It is interesting.
One of my aims this year is to do a live podcast in the top 5 cities that my listeners are in.
Oh wow.
And number 1 is London, but number 2 is Tokyo. So I'd really like to try and, you know, call that a business trip and go and explore Tokyo.
That'd be great.
That'd be really cool.
That's a really good idea.
But yeah, so what were some of the cultural norms or practices in Japan that you found yourself adapting to? Was there anything particularly challenging or easy to embrace?
Yeah, I think the thing I started to get used to quite a lot was how they eat. So like when you're on the go and that kind of thing, you have a lot of restaurants they are restaurants. I want to say they're kind of like bars because basically you go in there and you put money into a vending machine or like a ticket machine.
Okay.
Gives you a ticket, then you give it to the server and then they bring your food over. So it's a very sort of streamlined way to order. So you don't really have to interact too much with, you know, the waiter. You're not there for like a sit down meal. It's more like, okay, I want some nice food, but I want it quick.
Mm.
So I got used to that very quickly. Like one of my favorite dishes is soba. It's very nice. So it's like cold noodles on sort of like a tatami, small tatami sort of plate. And you so you dip them in a soy sauce kind of thing. So it's lovely. And it's, you know, I think quite nutritious, but very quick.
Right. Okay. I've just Googled it. It looks quite a difficult meal to eat on the go. It looks very plate based. Can you do it from a packet or something?
No, but it's more in terms of like the service is very, so you do sit down, but it's not.
Oh, you do sit down.
It's not like in a restaurant where they come over and they have small talk and then you have to wait a while. It is very quick and there's no talking. So that's what I got used to really. Like you go and order food like sushi. There's no small talk. You know, you can just sit down, you get the iPad machine and you order quickly and you can have something nice, but without all the fluff of a restaurant.
Right, right. Taking the fluff out of it. Yeah, good. And did that mean that you were able to cope at the beginning without having learned much about their language?
Yeah, I think if you are there for a short time, you can get by, especially in the central areas of Tokyo, because you have a lot of these places where you do. I mean, I suppose with the ticket machines, it is all in Japanese. So you do have to learn some of the characters for that. But over time, I kind of got used to which characters were for like soba and stuff. Mm. But yeah, it's interesting. The language was a big problem because I did go there quite ignorant, thinking I don't need to learn Japanese. You know, I just go there and be a Brit abroad. But then I realized that that wasn't the case after about a week. And I frantically started learning Japanese. And it was also, again, it was like a language that I discovered and started to love because it was completely different. You start from zero rather than you learn French, you can read the letters or something. You couldn't. You have to start from a baby's sort of perspective. So it's nice.
Yeah, that is a mad shift, isn't it? How good did you get?
I would say, I was intermediate level.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, I was pretty good. Could have conversations. I had a long-term girlfriend for a while, well, for 2 years. So I was sort of speaking with her. We were talking more in English, but we would drop into Japanese every now and then.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, very good. Another thing I wanted to touch on was the work culture. Stereotypically, they're known for their quite unique work ethic, being very diligent or very strict on themselves, working very hard, I'd say. Did you feel like you experienced that yourself? Did they expect more of you than you thought was the acceptable amount as a Brit?
I don't think so. Fortunately, I kind of was able to live there without kind of being integrated into that cultural norm specifically, which was quite nice. So yeah, I suppose I kind of worked for an English company that had two different sides. One was the sort of the office area and one was the school. So the Japanese office area they had different rules to us. So we kind of got the privilege of having a British working ethic, but in Japan. But the office area didn't have that, I don't believe.
So were they in like Monday to Saturday and you were rocking in late in the mornings and stuff in comparison?
Well, I had a really good schedule. The first job I had was terrible, but the second job, I had a really good schedule. So I was working Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Saturday.
Okay.
So I had 3 days off.
Yeah.
And they would also do shifts. So they would work, some would work Saturday, some would work Sunday as well as during the week. But it was still things like they would work a lot longer. So they would do more like 9 to 10 hour days, whereas we would, maybe 8 was my longest day. But sometimes I did a 6 hour day, depending on the classes.
And your partner, what was the industry that she worked in at the time?
She started off, when I first met her, she was selling ATM machines. So it was a very sort of monotonous job, apparently. You know, how do you sell an ATM machine? Like, oh, it has good buttons. You know, what do you, what's the upsell on that?
It's free cash.
It has color screen. So, and then she quit because she was older than me. And she, as I noticed, a lot of my friends who were British in the school, we all had Japanese girlfriends at some point, and they were kind of all 30 plus. We were in the later 20s, so we were like 25 to 29.
Right.
And so my girlfriend at the time, I met her when she was 30 and until 32. And she kind of everyone seems to have that crisis of like, I've worked really hard after graduating from university in this quite dull job, but good money. Right. And so she quit. She did the thing a lot of people did when she quit, and she started working in a coffee shop. So she sort of decided that she didn't want to earn so much money, which was a pain for me, because I was like, oh, here we go. You know, I'm going to be going to be the main breadwinner. But no, it was okay. So I think that's a very common thing, that a lot of people sort of jumped into working in a bar or a coffee shop because they want to have more of a lifestyle rather than just working right. all the time.
Yeah. And those jobs required less time for them?
The sort of the typical office job.
No, the job that she went into, the coffee shop, that didn't require as much time for her. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and also it was more of an interesting job. So you would meet people, you would have a chat, rather than it would be just about numbers and hitting your targets. I think office job in Japan is quite dull.
Right.
I mean, in England it probably is quite dull as well, but I don't think there's much, let's say, banter in the office.
Okay. Yeah, no David Brents walking around.
Unfortunately.
Or fortunately, yeah. Okay. Did you manage to get outside of the cities and explore the wonderful landscapes that Japan has to offer?
Yeah, I think when I saw this question, I thought there's need like a whole podcast on this by itself, because it is mad. And again, this was something I just sort of discovered, because I didn't Google, you know, what can you do in Tokyo or Japan? Right. And I discovered that you can sort of in one day, well, maybe not in one day, but you can one day you can ski and the next day you can surf.
Yeah, that's cool.
So there's a lot to do. So
that is cool.
Like on Sundays, we'll get the bus with my friend and go to a place called Nagano or Niigata, which is like a ski resort area. And it would just be like 3 hours. You get a day pass. You had to get some rental gear as well, and then they bring you back. So it's lovely. You could just do that on your day off.
Really cool.
And I would do the same on Tuesday, on Thursdays and Fridays. I would go surfing in a place called Chiba, which was another 2 hour drive, but someone would pick us up and so on.
Yeah. I assume in different seasons or the same season?
No, I just put a wetsuit on, and then, you know, it would be a little bit chilly, but it's very sunny in Tokyo.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Have you heard much about anything apart from Tokyo in Japan?
My students would show me photos of the temples that they would go to. There's quite a few amazing ones throughout the whole country, I think. There's the stereotypical one. I can't remember what the temple is called, but it's in front of Mount Fuji, isn't it?
Yeah, I never actually went to Mount Fuji. I used to just see it from afar. So when I was surfing in the winter, you could see it while you were surfing, which is really nice, in a place called Kamakura.
Oh, that is lovely.
Which has a Buddha there.
Right.
A big Buddha.
Big Buddha.
Which
Buddha
is cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, okay. And did the big Buddha teach you anything culturally that was worth taking away from the country?
Yeah. Sorry. The big Buddha, yeah. Well,
Have to be the big Buddha. I'm using him as a metaphor as Japan, of Japan there.
Yeah, sorry. yeah, no, I think what I learned the most was like about being patient, really. Kind of, you do take it on board quite a lot. How, for example, with the language is backwards to us. So they would say, I cat bought, or I go shop. Oh, sorry, I shop, go.
Right.
So naturally, whenever someone talks, you have to listen to them until the end of their sentence to understand what they're saying, rather than, you know, in English, you can kind of jump in.
Does that mean you can never finish somebody's sentence?
I suppose you could, because maybe they might know that you did something. But whenever I would talk with someone in Japanese or hear them talking, nobody ever interrupted somebody else. So that was very nice.
Right. Okay. That is nice, yeah. And also,
it's like kind of teaches you patience, you know?
Patience. And I was going to ask, did you ever share a silence with Japanese people? I've heard this is a cultural thing to just share silence with one another.
On the train every day. Yeah. I mean, the train is absolutely silent. So that's lovely. I do miss that because here in Barcelona, it's not.
Okay. There's a YouTuber that does a channel called Abroad in Japan. You may have come across him. Yeah, Chris. And he said that when he went to Japan, he shared a silence with the headmaster of his school. He didn't really know what was going on until he understood it later. But the headmaster just looked at him for about 2 minutes or maybe a minute, and they shared a silence. Was this...
I wasn't that fortunate to have one of those, but not a formal one. Maybe sometimes I ran out of conversation and we just sit there slurping our coffees.
Yeah, I had loads of them on first dates. It was great. Yeah, okay.
But no, yeah, there's a lot.
So patience.
Patience and having a lot of respect for others. So tying in with silence and that kind of thing. I did learn a lot more about respecting people's space and, being quiet, because other people might be, you know, like, especially living in housing in Japan, it's the walls are quite thin. So you have to really be careful of how much noise you make at home, because you don't want to annoy the neighbors and they don't do it to you either. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, that would be something really shocking for a Japanese person to come to maybe London and experience their neighbors being so rude.
How are your neighbors?
Well, the other night they had a party until 2 a.m. and they had music on until like 1 or something. And I don't want to be that prick, but at the same time, I don't want them to have fun. No, I do want them to have fun. I really want them to have fun, but I don't want to be suffering because of it.
Just not more fun than you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I almost want them to invite me in, but I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I just want to be invited. No, I don't know. But it would be shocking, I imagine, if you're used to being respectful for one another for that purpose. Okay, we've got more to carry on with and little time. So let's get into the next adventure. We will be leaving the free version of this episode here for today. But if you did want to continue listening to this conversation, then head over to thebritishenglishpodcast.com where you can sign up to the Premium Podcast or the Academy. The Premium Podcast gives you the ad-free version with transcripts, a full glossary and flashcards, whereas the Academy gives you all of that plus a whole lot more, including vocab video lessons, writing assignments, weekly Zoom classes, and you can also get paired with a new speaking partner of a similar level to yours each month to really get your speaking practice in. But if you were just here for the free version of this episode, then I thank you very much. Congratulations for getting to the end of this part. If you guys wanted to hear more from Chris or find out more about his content, because he's got a lot to offer, Instant English. Can I send them to YouTube, Instagram, all of the above? Which would you prefer them to go to?
YouTube is my baby. That's what I put most of my effort. So
YouTube is your baby.
Come on down.
And it's Instant English.
Instant English, yeah.
Instant English. Okay, cool. I'll put the link in the show notes. But thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Enjoy your Sunday.
Take care. Bye, guys.
All the best. Bye. And I hope to see you back here next week for another episode. I've been your host, Charlie, on the British English Podcast.